And welcome back to Coast, our special guest, Rick Allen, author of RFK. This hour, we'll take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Rick Allen with us. RFK is his book, and the book is available where, Rick?
Pretty much everywhere. We're on sale. We went on sale today in bookstores throughout America. We're online on Amazon, of course, and in fact, we were the number one book in our category tonight. So it's a tremendous debut, and I'm really grateful.
Yeah, that's well done, too. Well done.
Thank you.
Was it difficult to research it?
There's an awful lot of research material available. Much of the research that I did at the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library in Boston, which is a tremendous place and repository of Robert Kennedy's materials and others. But I also spoke to Kennedy's top aides and consulted original sources as well as secondary sources.
All right, back to the calls now we go. Let's go to Christian in San Pedro, California to get things started. Hi, Christian.
Hi, George. Hi, Rick. Yeah, by the way, I just want to say, George, I listened to the tribute show that you had for Art Bell.
Yeah.
I remember at one time I called in, and I'll tell you more in detail, but, you know, Art Bell was a little snippy at me when I complimented him. I said, it's so great talking to the legendary Art Bell, and he kind of said in a very gruff, you know, his gruff, well, just stop all that hero worship stuff. But, yeah, that was a good job. I wanted to comment and basically just put my 25 cents in, you know, with RFK.
Sure.
Thinking about him a lot because I watched that CNN special recently on the whole Kennedys, which was pretty good and pretty well done. I feel that I've done a lot, you know, George, like you, I've done a lot of reading on the Kennedy assassination. And I think that 6 years after the fact, after Dallas, that Bobby Kennedy happens to get hit, I think that there was a close connection between the both of them. I think that the same people who were behind the assassination of his brother, Jack, were the same influence behind Bobby, because I feel that essentially the Kennedy assassination was a coup d'etat. And I think that once Bobby threw his hat in the ring as a candidate for president of the United States, I think they literally, they panicked, and because the idea is that they knew, and especially after Martin Luther King was killed, when he was able to calm down that crowd and reason with them, you know, when he broke the news that King had been killed, I think that they knew that if Bobby became president, he was going to end the war in Vietnam. I think especially they were afraid that he was really going to start, you know, pretty much pick up where his brother left off.
And he might go after them with a vengeance.
Absolutely, and you know the streets were going to run red with blood. And I think that the idea of Bobby becoming president, running, was too dangerous. And I just wanted to know, how does Rick feel about the idea that I think that the CIA was predominantly behind the assassination of Bobby Kennedy? And I'll take my answer on the air. And thank you for your time, guys.
Sure. Now, I'm not so sure the CIA was involved in that. Bill Pepper, the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, has been on our program, Rick, several times. He is pretty convinced that Sirhan was not the one who did it. If anything, he might have been brainwashed or something. But it's conceivable that the same players involved in John F. Kennedy's assassination might have been involved in his. What do you think?
I have to be honest with you, George. I don't.
You're not a conspiracy guy.
I'm just not, and particularly with respect to both of the Kennedys, I don't find personally for me that it does anything to inform the decisions I'm going to make, and really to be more focused on the future and to think about their life rather than their death. I know that many, many Americans feel differently. I know that Paul Schrade, who was a close aide to Senator Kennedy and was shot in the head that night, Paul's been spending much of the last number of years researching the circumstances of Senator Kennedy's murder. But it's just not something that I've spent the time researching or know much about. And so I'm not a particularly good source for those theories. You mentioned earlier on that Robert Kennedy made many enemies. And there are enemies who are powerful and move collectively like organized crime. Mm-hmm. And there are enemies like Sirhan Sirhan, who saw Senator Kennedy debate Senator McCarthy before the California primary, and because of Robert Kennedy's support of the State of Israel, became enraged at him for that reason. We live in an awfully dangerous world, and then as now, a single individual with access to a firearm is able to wreak terrible havoc. And then the Secret Service protection was significantly less than it is now.
Sure.
So it was a horrible tragedy. I don't know the complete circumstances. I've been accepting of the legal process as it's prevailed over the years, and I'm really focused on doing what our book, RFK is Words for Our Times, does, which is present Kennedy's views and words directly. And you know, you played an excerpt from U2's With or Without You at the top of the hour. One of the individuals that I went to ask for their reflections on Robert Kennedy's legacy was Bono. And I had no idea what he would write, but I thought it would be interesting. And I knew that Robert Kennedy had had a significant impact on him throughout his life. He wrote a spectacular three-quarters of a page. Very, very personal, really focused on what he took from Robert Kennedy. Bono as an Irishman, Kennedy as an Irish-American. And it's lyrical and perfect. And I would commend it to certainly all fans of Robert Kennedy and all fans of U2. But I think anybody interested in the interplay between American history and popular culture will find it just a great read.
Let's go to Frank now in Hollywood, Maryland. Hey, Frank, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Glad to be back with you. Mr. Allen, I want you to verify a chronology of events. When the Kennedys got Martin Luther King out of jail, and I think it was Birmingham, did Richard Nixon try to get him out before the Kennedys did? He went to Eisenhower to help arrange it, and Eisenhower told him pretty much to get lost because he was going to lose the white vote if he tried to do that.
I don't know.
Do you know exactly?
I don't know the substance of a conversation between Eisenhower and Nixon. I can tell you that there was considerable debate within the John Kennedy campaign about the wisdom of taking a position on Martin Luther King's arrest. And Robert Kennedy's reaction initially was really, really negative. It was raised by Harris Wofford, who I've had the pleasure of knowing for many years and who was senator from Pennsylvania later on. At that time, he was the head of the civil rights activities within the John Kennedy campaign. And Wofford recommended that John Kennedy should make a statement regarding Dr. King's arrest and jailing. And Robert Kennedy was very, very much opposed, and then came back after reflection and said, this is, well, he made the call and talked to the governor and ended up securing Martin Luther King's release. And when Wofford and others asked him, what happened to change your perspective 180 degrees? He said, I started thinking about him sitting in that jail for a trumped up charge. And this isn't a direct quote, but the essence of it is for a trumped up charge and all of the difficulty that that arrest and imprisonment was causing in the country and how it was screwing up my brother's campaign. And I felt I had to do something. So that was Robert Kennedy demonstrating a number of things. One, his focus on his brother's career and campaign, and two, his willingness to take really dramatic action in the face of some significant risks when he thought it was the right thing to do.
Did Robert F. Kennedy ever leak information about what we planned to do to Castro?
Again, to say that anybody in public life never leaked information to the press is a dangerous statement to make. I've spent enough time in politics that I'd never make an absolute statement. The times were very different then. The volume of leaking to the press was significantly less than it is now. And I think that if you're talking about a range of CIA activities against Castro, that really was not disclosed during those years, so I don't think there was a leak. But I'll tell you what we do have in the book is a section from what ended up being an unfinished manuscript when Senator Kennedy was killed, which later was put together and became the book 13 Days. And what we include in our book is his writing about what he thought the lessons of the Cuban Missile Crisis were. And he said, and this is a direct quote, "The final lesson of the Cuban Missile Crisis is the importance of placing ourselves in the other country's shoes. During the crisis, President Kennedy spent more time trying to determine the effect of a particular course of action on Khrushchev or the Russians than any other phase of what he was doing. What guided all his deliberations was an effort not to disgrace Khrushchev, not to humiliate the Soviet Union, not to have them feel that they would have to escalate their response because their national security or national interests so committed them." And he, and after it was finished, Robert Kennedy said, he, meaning his brother, the president, made no statement attempting to take credit for himself or for the administration for what had occurred. If it was a triumph, it was a triumph for the next generation and not any particular government or people. A wise course under circumstances that pretty clearly were the riskiest in American history because of the threat of nuclear war. And an interesting way to think about dealing with an adversary and how an administration regards its role in taking credit for its action.
Rick, John F. Kennedy, known for some great slogans, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Were there any pinned on Robert Kennedy?
There are so many segments, so many excerpts from his speeches that are memorable, long
classics,
and short,
yeah.
And that Martin Luther King speech, which you referenced, again, extemporaneously, gave us beautiful lines. And I'll just mention one because I know you want to take more questions. But the way Senator Kennedy concluded that speech was, "Let us dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world."
He was well educated.
He was. He was, in a traditional sense, well-schooled, Milton Academy, and Harvard and University of Virginia Law School, but also well schooled on his own initiative, particularly after his brother's death, when his grief drove him to read many things, both religious in nature and secular. And that's where the Aeschylus quote came from, his readings during that period.
East of the Rockies, Stephen in Connecticut's with us now. Stephen, go ahead.
Gentlemen, I understand that President Khrushchev actually admired Kennedy. Probably had a lot to do with what he just said a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, taking it from a different perspective, football player Rudy Gear was the bodyguard of Robert Kennedy.
He was there when he was shot. That's true.
Right. I think he actually had apprehended Sirhan Sirhan, if I'm not mistaken. Have you ever had a chance to talk to him, see if you get any insight about what his perspective on Robert Kennedy was?
Well, they were very, very close. And Rafer Johnson and Rosie Grier were exceptionally close friends of the whole Kennedy family. And Rosie did wrestle the gun away from Sirhan Sirhan with a number of other individuals who were involved in what, became a very, very chaotic situation. And I think all of the folks around Senator Kennedy at that time have spoken pretty eloquently of their love for the man. I had the opportunity to hear Harry Belafonte in December talk about Robert Kennedy and the impact that he had at the time and on Belafonte's life since. And it was extremely, extremely moving.
Rosie Grier, now still 85 years old. He'd be an interesting interview, would he not, Rick?
I think he would. He's had quite a life.
Oh, my God. And to relive that episode, it would be for me, who's, very into these cases, to hear what he would have to say about Sirhan Sirhan. Because on one hand, Sirhan copped a plea. I mean, he pled guilty. Now he claims he has no memory at all with what's happened. Bill Pepper, again, the attorney, claims that he didn't have anything to do with it, or maybe he was a Manchurian candidate type person. But I would love to get someone like Rosie Grier to say the guy had a gun in his hand and I jumped him.
Yep.
That's
for certain happened.
Yeah.
The testimony of all of those folks.
Were there others in that room with guns? Who knows, I guess, because there's been talk that there were other shots fired, but clearly they jumped Sirhan Sirhan, and he had a gun in his hand.
Yes. Yes.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with the final segment. Rick Allen with us with his book, RFK, His Words of Our Times. We are back with our final segment with Rick Allen. His book is called RFK, His Words for Our Times. Hard to believe, still 50 years. I can't get over where the time flies.
I know. I feel the same way.
I found my teacher when John F. Kennedy got killed. I was in class. I was 13 years old. And our teacher was an English teacher, Miss Leonard. And I found her last year, Rick, put her on the air for a little bit. It's kind of emotional. I mean, I remember her coming in saying the president, now keep in mind we're 13,
Yep. And
said the president's been killed. She starts crying, and it really didn't sink into us until I went home and saw my parents all upset. And then I realized there's something going on here.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I remember watching television when Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald. I couldn't believe that. Can you imagine nowadays an assassin of a president or a leader being marched in front of reporters like that? It would never happen.
Unfortunately, the changes have largely been because there were so many inexplicable and horrific incidents. We still haven't figured out how to stop them all, quite obviously. But I can tell you, having worked with the Secret Service during the years that I was in the Clinton White House, they are exceptional, exceptional professionals. It's a pleasure to work with them, and to imagine folks who come to work every day knowing that they may be called upon to make the ultimate sacrifice to do their job, they really deserve our respect.
What would you like people to take away with your book, RFK, once they read it?
That's a great question. I think I'd say three things. First, to be entertained. These are great stories from the life of one of America's most famous leaders, as we've been saying. Second, inspired. Inspired by Robert Kennedy's own words on that full range of challenges we still face now. And I think third, moved by the reflection of the world leaders that, as I mentioned, gave us those personal reflections on RFK's impact on them and the message for us. But for me, this isn't an exercise in nostalgia. It really is a catalyst to action. So I hope, and to state it finally, I hope that people take all three of those threads and use it to go out and make change.
To the phones we now go. Let's go to Tim in Plainfield, Indiana. First-time caller. Hi, Tim. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
Great show. George, just let me say thanks for your service back in the day and what you're doing now.
Oh, thank you.
I just got a 1968 story about the presidential campaign of Bobby Kennedy and Richard Nixon.
Okay.
I was 16 in 68, and we had a little rock band, and we got pretty good. We had a standing gig at a place called the Servicemen Center in downtown Indianapolis. It was a USO facility, and we parlayed that gig into the Richard Nixon presidential campaign. And we weren't the main, it was at Southport High School. We weren't the main band. They had like the Purdue marching band inside, but we were set up outside, and we were supposed to play an hour before the speeches. And we're out there playing, and the limos roll up, and Richard Nixon pops out. And he comes up, we finish, and he grabs the mic, and he starts thanking everybody and shakes my hand and the band members and all the parents. And anyway, then he goes in and gives this big campaign speech. Well, so we parlayed that gig into the Republican gig, into the Democratic gig, and we got the Bobby Kennedy gig playing for his campaign rally. This was at, though, it wasn't at a high school. It was at the biggest, classiest place in Indianapolis called the Indiana Roof Ballroom. And so I was thrilled just to be playing there. But anyway, day of the gig, we show up, and I was excited. I grabbed my bass drum. Everybody else is unloading. I grabbed the bass drum, head for the elevator, go up. Huge ballroom type thing, just like I had heard of. This was the place where all the big bands used to play. Benny Goodman, Tommy Dorsey, all that back in the day. And anyway, they said, we're the main band. They're the only band. So I head for center stage, set up the bass drum, and I kick it a few times and start tuning up. And it was a huge sound. Everybody stopped and see what the sound was. And about that time, this guy comes running up and says, whoa, whoa, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm the drummer in the band. We're setting up. And he said, well, I'm sorry, but plans have changed. He said, we're not having a band tonight. We're just having speeches.
Oh.
And I said, oh, well, I was totally disappointed, of course. And I was kind of halfway arguing with him.
Yeah.
And finally, I said, well, you know, it was a paying gig. And he said, oh, well, okay. How much were you promised? And I told him it was $200. That was huge money back in 68.
Oh, sure.
But anyway, he didn't flinch. He reached in his pocket, to this day, biggest wad of bills I've ever seen, about the size of a baseball.
Huh.
Peeled me off a couple $100 and basically said, here you go, kid, beat it. So I did. I grabbed the baseline, headed back down. And just as I got down to the street, my dad and the other guys were coming up, and I disappointedly told them that we're not playing tonight, that they canceled the gig. And anyway, I showed them the money, and they said, well, okay, the gig's over. So we went to the Waffle House, and we partied like rock stars. But the point of the gig was that day, the reason they canceled that gig was that was April 4th, 1968. Martin Luther King. And Bobby Kennedy, and the rally... The campaign rally was in downtown at the Indiana Roof Ballroom.
That's right.
Instead of doing that.
I just played a clip of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Very emotional.
He went down to 17th and Broadway in an inner city, and Rick, you said that there was a campaign rally going. It was, from what I understand, it was more like an angry mob. There had been rumors that Martin Luther had been killed, but nobody really knew because the communication wasn't there.
Yeah, they hadn't confirmed it yet.
Yeah. And in my opinion, what Bobby Kennedy did, if you put yourself in the line of fire to ensure the safety of others, as if you're a soldier, that's what you get the Silver Star for. And in my opinion, that's what Bobby Kennedy did that day. He went down to that angry mob and gave that speech. And it literally, there was no riot. There was riots in every major city except Indianapolis.
That's exactly
right. And today, there's a huge monument down there at 17th and Broadway, big stone monument commemorating the whole thing. And they just dedicated as a National Historic Site just weeks ago.
That's right.
It's a great story.
And that was a great ceremony. Kerry Kennedy and John Lewis went down, among others. And it was a terrific ceremony. They have a wonderful piece of sculpture there that shows on one side Martin Luther King and on the other Robert Kennedy. And they're reaching out kind of towards each other. I'd urge people to go on the web and Google it. It's a really neat sculpture, and that is an important site, and it was wonderful that its historical significance was recognized by Congress recently.
With so many people who were opposed to Kennedy, did he have any inkling at all that people wanted to get him?
Oh, sure.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. Didn't seem to bother him, though, did it?
Well, of course it bothered him. He wasn't someone who courted death, but he understood.
But he hid it. He hid it well.
Well, he did, because he had made the determination that despite the risks he faced, he was going to continue to be a public figure, continue to speak out on the issues that were important to him. And he was a very religious man, and I think he felt that this was the direction he was supposed to take, and he was going to do it despite the risk.
Did he feel as if he had to carry on his brother's legacy?
That was a very strong influence on him, without question. I think the difficult decision for him was how to carry on that legacy. Because, as I said, initially, he would have hoped to do it without having to enter public life himself. But in the end, that was the direction that gave him the best opportunity to make a difference, and that's the direction he went in.
Shelley is in Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program, Shelley. Hi.
Salutations, George and Rick. Did we notice the numerology of his death, 666? June 6, 1968. George, I know you're an 11/11 person like myself.
I am.
I definitely think Manchurian Candidate. If you look at his reaction, he's stoic. He has no affect. I'm intuitive, but I believe he didn't remember anything. And the CIA left him wide open. But if you look at the pictures, that's what I want to ask your guest. Did he look at the pictures? Because all the players are in the pictures. And this one theory I read has elite international assassins in the pictures and an MKUltra psychologist. Did he research and really look at the pictures in detail?
I don't think Rick has jumped into the assassination portion, but Rick, I'll let you answer that.
No, I really haven't. I will tell you that Senator Kennedy's last words after having been shot were, is everyone okay? And that was what his attention was.
I'll always remember that horrible picture of him with blood coming out of his head on the floor with those glassed eyes, those glazed looking eyes, just staring into nothingness.
It's a terrible image and a painful one for all of us. And
it's surreal.
I just urge people to think about all of the images of him in life. And the words that he left us with and the beliefs and actions that he followed.
Name of the book, RFK, His Words for Our Times. Let's go next to Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Hey, Joe.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Rick, and I appreciate your mentioning Harris Wolford's name. A friend of mine's uncle is Harris Wolford. I wanted to ask, you know, just maybe speculation on your part. Who do you think Robert F. Kennedy would have selected as his running mate?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't think they had started to work through the politics of that in June, you know, by early June.
I mean, they were politically savvy because when, you know, John Kennedy and his team picked Lyndon Johnson, I mean, they hated each other. But they needed
true.
Texas, and they needed Johnson's clout.
Yes, and as you know, George, that was a decision that Robert Kennedy really, really opposed, and his brother knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the principal reason why Lyndon Johnson detested Robert Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And I urge your listeners to take a look at a book called Mutual Contempt by Jeff Schessel. It's a fantastic, fantastic book about the relationship between LBJ and Robert Kennedy.
Well, there's still that theory out there from another camp that believes that LBJ may have also contributed to John F. Kennedy's assassination. That is a far-fetched theory, I think, but it's out there.
There are an awful lot of theories out there, and I don't think we're going to have definitive information at any point in time that's likely to change our perspectives about either of those assassinations. I do think that we're confronted with choices every moment of every day about how we're going to live our life and what direction we're going to drive the country in. And I think that's a great use of time.
Let's go to Paul in Jefferson City, Missouri. Squeeze you in here, Paul. Go ahead.
Good evening, George and Rick. I believe the Kennedy brothers are the last honest, independent leaders who truly had our country's destined to start, who could not, would not be controlled by the deep state, and they were taken out as a result. I'm hopeful Trump is the same character, and he obviously doesn't trust the Secret Service and still has his own private security. It's a dramatic indication how serious things are. But what I wanted to ask about RFK and his children and other Kennedys, it sounds kind of true, but what's the deal with the voice, the broken cadence of his vocal style? I've never seen anything commenting on it. Thanks.
Oh, you're talking about Bobby Jr. He has a throat ailment, the name of which I've forgotten, but it is a kind of deterioration in the vocal cords. I don't know the details. He's been, you know, fighting it for quite some time. It's impaired his ability to speak, and Bobby Jr. is a tremendous speaker. We went, a group of us with Ethel, to South Africa in 1996.
Spasmodic, by the way, dysphonia.
That's exactly right.
That's
what
he's
got.
Thank
you. Wouldn't have remembered that if you'd...
Nor would I, if it wasn't for my sharp producers.
Right? There you go.
Rick, we are out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. Keep in touch with us. You're always invited back, okay?
Thank you very much, George. It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
The book, RFK, His Words for Our Times by Rick Allen. It's a great read. We're going to come back in just a moment with Mary Occhino back with us on Coast to Coast as we talk about past lives and how they affect present journeys. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.